and we start to walk down the terminal. I don't know who it was. Somebody screamed, "Turn around and run!" And we all start running towards, you know, the end of the terminal. I'm next to the captain. I said to the captain, "What the hell is going on now?" He goes, "You know that LA flight over there?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "We were never going anywhere. This was a sting operation by the FBI. They just took four guys connected with the hijacking off of that plane over there."
The following podcast is a Carolina Boys production. Welcome back, everyone, to Crime and Entertainment. I'm Hollywood Wade. Now, today is 9/11. And last year, if you've been with us for a minute, we had two great interviews last year for 9/11. Eric Roningen and David Carpenter Jr., both fantastic interviews. David was a fireman. Eric was actually in one of the buildings when it got hit. So go back and check those out. But today we have Carol Hellerman. Now, Carol was actually a New York City flight attendant there on 9/11. And a really strange thing happened in the area where she was at, and even some stuff that I haven't heard before. I know the TMZ come out with a thing called the fifth plane, but this is something that was put together on 9/12, the day after, that she was actually unknowingly a part of, I may add, because you have to check out the interview, of where they was setting up a sting operation, trying to see who would take the bait of trying to get out of town after this horrible attack on the Twin Towers, and of course, DC, and the plane that was headed to the White House. So take a look at this interview with Carol Hellerman here on Crime and Entertainment. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Crime and Entertainment. I've got a very, very interesting guest for you today. Please welcome to the show, Carol Hellerman. Carol, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Listen, I got to tell you right off the bat, as we spoke off air, I heard your episode on Matt Cox's podcast, so shout out to Matt Cox, Inside True Crime, and I had to get you on because you've got a very interesting story that revolves around the 9/11 and 9/11 attacks, and I've always been fascinated by that whole event, and I'm sure a lot of people are, the general public, you know, is kind of, I think, under the assumption, at least the masses, that there's a lot that we don't know and that we were kept in the dark about. But before we jump straight into all that, let's get a little background on who you are. Give us a little quick primer on who Carol Hellerman is.
Who I am? Well, I was a flight attendant with American Airlines. I am currently retired. I flew for the airlines for 23 years.
Wow.
Basically, I did a lot of international flights. London was my second home. I was over there a lot. And that's about it. I live in Huntington, Long Island.
I'm coming up there this week, as a matter of fact. Is that anywhere near Ronkonkoma?
Yeah, Ronkonkoma is out on the island. Yeah, it's okay. Further out.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I got to ask real quick before we get into this, being a stewardess, what led you into that particular profession?
Well, when I was 12 years old, I went to Italy. My grandfather paid for us to go over and stay with relatives in Calabria.
Wow.
And I flew on Alitalia and I looked at my mother. I was 12 years old and I said, I want to do that when I grow up. But it took me a while to get there.
Yeah,
because I actually raised my daughter first, and at 41 years old, I became a flight attendant.
Wow! So the actual flying itself never bothered you, never scared you flying?
No, I never had a problem with it. Even after 9/11, my husband used to tell people that my wife is safer on the plane than driving to the airport because of traffic.
I'm sure my wife would probably say the same thing about me.
Yeah.
The first flight I ever took in my life, I took to New York. It was probably about 3 years after 9/11. And that was the first flight I'd ever took. And since then, I didn't fly, but maybe about three or four more times. And since I started this podcast these last couple of years, I've done a lot of flying. I've flew to New York probably about seven or eight times, Tampa a few times, just went to Vegas. So I'm getting used to it. It's been a while since I'd flown, but I'm getting back used to it now.
Back in the day, it was a lot nicer and a lot easier to fly.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of like pack them in and, you know, it's the services aren't the same, you know.
Right. That's what I get from a lot of the old timers that I talk to about how they used to fly back in the day. It's totally different. Yep. And so I'm assuming you work right out of the Long Island area. Were you a JFK?
I was JFK flight attendant, yes.
Okay. And so kind of walk us through what, you know, your experience was here on 9/11, because you've got a quite an interesting story that I want everybody to really take a listen to, because recently we had, what was it on Hulu? The TMZ show that come out called The Fifth Plane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They claim to be the fifth airplane. But I claim there was a lot more than five airplanes.
Right. And that's what we're going to get into here. And I totally buy that. You know, maybe there was a lot more than just a fifth. I don't, you know, with the execution, how they did pull it off, there's no way to tell that there wasn't more planned, that just, you know, for one reason or another, things didn't go through like they wanted it to. You know, that's just the ones that we know about, you know, obviously the two that crashed into the towers, the one to the Pentagon, and the one that crashed in Shanksville. But kind of walk us through, you know, what happened that day and kind of where you're sitting with all this now, all these years later.
Okay. First of all, you know, like everybody knows, it was a beautiful day. Mm-hmm. I had a flight that morning. My flight was supposed to leave at 9 a.m. I had a flight from JFK to L.A. I got to the airport. The flight was very light. There had been weather in the area the night before, which was another thing that threw the terrorists off, because a lot of planes were out of place. When there's weather in, you know, in the Northeast or anywhere in the country or whatever, it, you know, the planes can't fly, they're delayed. So, you know, planes weren't in place. So also, the flight was very light, which is what they were hoping for. Mm-hmm. I got to the airport, got on the plane. I was what they call the director. I stand at the doorway. Every flight attendant has a job on the plane. They're numbered, so we know what we're doing when we get on the plane. Mine was to direct people. So I was standing at the door. It was a fairly large aircraft, 767. And like I said, it was very light. So it was about, I don't know, I guess about 20 to 9. And the agent comes down and she says to me, "Come here, come here." And she pulls me off the plane. She goes, "Look." And I'm on the jet bridge and I could see the Twin Towers burning from the jet bridge. I said, "Wow." And I thought, like everybody else, some poor pilot had a heart attack in a little plane, you know, and hit the tower by accident or whatever. So I was like, "Wow." You know, so I ran in the back to tell the crew. I came back up. When I came back up to the front, the captain came on and he said, "Ladies and gentlemen, first thing I want you to do is say a prayer. Second thing I want you to do is pick up your luggage and leave quietly." I was like, "Oh, okay. So they're canceling the flight." So at that point, everybody was coming forward. The people were leaving. There were three or four Middle Eastern gentlemen who came up front. And at the time, you know, I didn't think anything of it. And they started arguing with my person as to why is this flight canceled, you know. So the purser is the flight attendant who works up front, first class, who handles a lot of paperwork, and they're more or less in charge. Mm-hmm. So they were arguing with her, and, you know, finally they just left. I personally was probably, me and my other flight attendant friends were probably the last people to know what was actually happening. Because we stayed on the plane after the people left. And we were all like, "Oh, you know, what is scheduling going to do with us? Because, you know, I mean, if something cancels, then they'll use you for something else." And all of a sudden, the gate agent runs on the plane. She comes to the back and she said, another plane hit the trade and one hit the Pentagon. And then we all looked at each other and we all knew something was like off. She said, they locked down Kennedy Airport. Nobody's allowed out. You have to get off the plane. You have to go to operations. Basically, if there's a base for flight attendants, we have an operations area in the airport where, you know, it's a TV. It's kind of a lounge where we can hang out. Mm-hmm. So everybody went to operations. When I got off the plane, I really had no idea what was going on. I'm walking through the terminal to go to operations. American flight attendants are running through the terminal screaming, it's us, it's us. It was a nightmare. Okay. I go up, you know, we watch the towers fall from, you know, TV we had in ops. And then all of a sudden they said, okay, we're throwing everybody out. You know, you have to leave. They're evacuating JFK. So we all waited, took the employee bus back. I drove home. I was so angry. I was so angry. They hit New York, which is my home. They hit my company, which is American Airlines. I felt like they were taking this job that I wanted. I'd only been flying a year and a half, not even. And I felt like they took this job that I'd always wanted away from me. I didn't know what was going to happen. So I'm one of those people who I don't get scared. I get mad.
Yeah.
I'm a true New Yorker. I got mad. And I called our schedulers the next day and I said, you put me on the next flight you have going anywhere. I'm going to fly for you. And they told me they had a trip to San Francisco. And I said, okay, what position? And they said, what position do you want? Nobody wanted to, you know, get on an airplane. So, and I was only a year and a half, and positions are, and trips you get by seniority. So I had only been flying a year and a half. So I was pretty junior.
Right.
So it was pretty odd. So anyway, so why I didn't see, I don't understand. Like, I guess I was just so angry. I didn't register. They had locked down New York. Mm-hmm. Why I thought I was going anywhere on an airplane is beyond me. I don't even like, it didn't even enter my thought process. But so I was going to fly. So I go to the airport. And there were three flights going out of JFK that night, supposedly. Miami, San Fran, which I was on, and an LA flight. So if you think about it, it's a way to capture anybody who's remaining in the New York area. Those, if they got out of New York on those flights, those are three ports of exits out of the United States. Mm-hmm. If you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So that was a good way to catch anybody in the New York area who was trying to get out of here. Anyway, that didn't enter my mind either. So I'm walking through the terminal and I look to my left and the LA flight is to my left at that gate. There was all kinds of commotion going on at that gate. But I just kept walking to my gate because I had to get to my airplane. I didn't really, you know, I was like, wow, I wonder what's going on there. I saw Port Authority cops there. I saw like all kinds of stuff. So I'm like, all right. So I go to my flight. I get to the flight and the people who were the other flight attendants were brand new flight attendants. They were new hires who were not protected by a union. You don't get protected by a union for 6 months.
Okay.
They were very upset. And I said, why are you here? And they said, they told us they'd fire us if we didn't take this flight.
Holy cow.
Isn't that nice? So I'm the most senior person on this flight, you know, so I'm trying to show them what to do on the plane because it's a big deal back then. There was a lot of service, you know, and so I'm trying to get that organized. The plane is packed. We're sitting there. We're not leaving. The captain comes on and he goes, ladies and gentlemen, due to air traffic, he said, we're delayed. And I go, there's nothing up there. What is he talking about? Air traffic? I mean, it was kind of weird. Then all of a sudden, all these people are on their phones, you know, oh, we heard that they on the flight next to us, they caught some terrorists with box cutters and knives. And I'm like, you know what? Just relax until the captain tells us what's going on. You know, we're just going to be calm. About 15 minutes later, the captain comes on and says, ladies and gentlemen, our flight's canceled. So we're like, oh. So there was, I mean, there were so many people on the, you know, the plane. Everybody gets up and they all leave. But we all kind of stuck behind to talk to each other, the flight crew.
How many people you think was on that particular plane there?
Oh, God, 767, well, it was 30 business, 200 and coach, probably about, I don't know, like 280 people, wow. Maybe.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe a little less. I don't remember. It's a long time since I flew that plane. I got rid of that plane a long time ago. This is going back 20 some years ago,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
So probably about 250, let's say. Anyway, it was a big plane.
Right.
So everybody leaves, you know, and the flight attendants will all stay behind talking to each other. The people are long gone. The passengers are long gone. So we decide we're going to leave. We get off the plane and we start to walk down the terminal. I don't know who it was. Somebody screamed, turn around and run. And we all start running towards, you know, the end of the terminal. I'm next to the captain. I said to the captain, the hell is going on now? He goes, you know that LA flight over there? I said, yeah. He goes, we were never going anywhere. This was a sting operation by the FBI. They just took four guys connected with the hijacking off of that plane over there. I said, what? He goes, yeah, they told the pilots. They didn't tell the flight attendants. We had no idea, but the pilots knew what was going on. So
they strategically set up, like you said, destinations to where it would make it easier for them to get out of the country, thinking that if they would be dumb enough to take the bait, then they would be easy to spot of who was trying to get out of New York. I see. Well, I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah. So finally, I see a manager that I know, and there's like a little, we call it a debrief room. There's a little room by one of the gates. And I see these flight attendants walking with the manager, and they go into the debrief room. And if you could see the look on their face, they look like somebody shot them. I mean, it was horrible. I still didn't know, you know, exactly what had happened to them. I still didn't know what exactly happened at that gate, except that it was a sting operation. And, you know, because captains told me that they had taken people off. So after that, they let us walk by. When I walked by, I saw an FBI guy or a SWAT team guy standing there with a rifle, standing at the gate door. So I don't know if those guys were still on there at that point. I don't know what was going on. So me being the person I am, I wanted everybody to know what happened, my colleagues, okay? So every chance I got, I would talk about the sting operation at JFK. At one point, I actually flew with a flight attendant. Sometimes they would be fill-in managers at Kennedy. You could be a flight attendant, sometimes a fill-in as a manager. Mm-hmm. And there was one guy I know who was the manager the night of the sting operation, and I flew with him. And when I was telling the story, he kept looking at me going, that didn't happen. And I said, excuse me? And he's giving me these eyes like, shut up. And I'm like, are you calling me a liar? And then I went up front of the plane and he came up later and apologized to me. But apparently they like told, you know, that you weren't supposed to talk about it.
Right.
But nobody had even told me what was going on. So nobody had told me not to talk about it. But I wanted my colleagues to know. So maybe a year goes by and I was flying. Sometimes they need an extra flight attendant if the amount of people on the plane exceeds what they thought it was going to be. So you need another flight attendant.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to fly with other bases, like not just your own base. You're an extra flight attendant.
Right.
So they needed a flight attendant for this LA trip, you know, from JFK to go over. So I get on the plane and I'm talking to the flight attendants about the sting operation because I knew it was an LA flight that it all went down on. And the flight attendant looks at me and he says, I was on that flight. I said, are you kidding me? I said, what happened? Okay. Let's explain the first thing. I'm walking by in the commotion. What had happened was there was a guy posing as a flight attendant. He even had a badge. And they let him on the airplane. Flight attendants started talking to him. And they said, you know, how come you're not deadheading? Deadheading means that you are flying without working.
Right.
They put you in a seat and they need you somewhere else. So they deadhead you.
Yeah.
He had no idea what they were talking about. One of them kept him talking and the other one went off and they got the Port Authority cops. He was a terrorist. They took him off the plane. That was the first one they took off. That's what the commotion was when I was walking by. Then he told me they did everything normally. Captain said, prepare for departure. They backed off the gate. He said, as soon as they backed off the gate, the front and the back doors of the airplane were flung open and like a SWAT team came on board screaming, heads down, heads down. And they knew exactly where they were sitting and they took them off at gunpoint, terrorists off their flight.
Wow.
This is what he told me. Okay. I had never known what was going to happen. I also know he said none of the other ladies who were on that flight with him, flight attendants, had returned back to work. And I found out via a page on Facebook that only flight attendants have access to, that only him and another woman returned back to work. She apparently passed away now. She's not even alive anymore, but he's still working. And he had told his story to somebody else because the same story that I just told you about, somebody wrote on Facebook about what he had told her about. Same exact story.
Wow.
So that is what, you know, that is what happened to me. Also, the reason why I know that there were probably more planes is because there I go again. The next day I said, put me on another flight. When planes, like maybe it was 4 days after when they started flying again, I think, I was deadheaded out to California, to San Diego, and I brought back the first transcon back to JFK. I was on that flight. After the service, there was a pilot on our flight who, you know, he was riding. He wasn't working. And after our service, he came to the back and he started talking to us. And he said to me, he said to us, he said, you know, on 9/11, I was on flight one. He said, I was going to L.A. and the FBI spoke to me. We were supposed to hit the Sears Tower in Chicago that morning. That's where we were supposed to end up. And I said, really, that's where I was supposed to end up? Because I was on flight one. You were my captain that morning. And he goes, did the FBI speak to you? And I said, no. He said, I don't know why they spoke to me. I told them they needed to speak to the flight attendants because the flight attendants were out there with them. I was in the cockpit. I was in the flight deck. I didn't see anybody. So he said, yeah, they told him we were supposed to hit the Sears Tower in Chicago that morning. And they had a target for every city in the U.S.
Jesus, every city.
Like they had like any major city that had like, say, you know, in like St. Louis, you know, they have the arch in, right, you know, wherever. I also, on that same flight attendant page, after the TMZ story came out, people were writing on this flight attendant page about their experiences. One gentleman on there said he was flying from Boston. They were going to, I think they were going to LA. Maybe it was an earlier flight before the one that hit the tower, because that was coming from Boston also.
Right.
And he wrote that, you know, they started grounding all the planes. That's another reason why nothing happened,
right,
is because air traffic control started putting them all on and grounding everybody. But he said he was grounded in Kansas City. They landed the plane in Kansas City instead of going to LA. And the FBI came in and took guys, Middle Eastern guys, off of his flight. They knew they were on the plane and they took them off his flight. This is what he wrote on, you know, on this page.
Were both flights hit the towers? I know one of them, the first one I know, left out of Boston Logan Airport. Did the other one leave out of Boston as well?
No, the other one was United.
Yeah.
I don't know where. I don't know where they were.
Well, United 93 was the one that crashed in Shanksville.
Right.
Yeah.
And the one that hit the Pentagon was a 757. That was American. That was us.
Okay.
And I think the other one that hit the tower was United also. I don't know where they were coming from.
Now, I mean, looking back, I've watched countless documentaries on 9/11, and you mentioned something earlier. You called yourself number one. Well, I remember the flight attendant that you heard a lot of the voice recordings from. Her name was Betty Ong, and that was the first.
I wanted to talk. Yeah.
Okay.
One of the reasons that a lot of people don't even realize that they grounded all the airplanes is because while the mayhem was going on the flight from Boston, the first one, Flight 11, that hit the tower. Mm-hmm. While this was all going on, she was secretly on the phone with our operations in Boston, telling them exactly what was going on that airplane. Mm-hmm. Her and another flight attendant, Sweeney, they both were informing, American what was going on. And they are the reason that people knew immediately and why the flights got grounded. Mm-hmm. They were heroes and nobody ever talks about them.
Yeah.
And those were the two flight attendants on Flight 11, American Airlines.
And I remember in her talking to whoever that was she was speaking with, she was saying that her number one had been stabbed and that I guess they had sprayed mace in the cockpit. And that particular flight, I believe, was flown by Muhammad Atta. And we know that there's an actor, and I'm not sure if you know, James Woods. He's been in acting for a long time. You ever seen the movie Casino?
No, actually, no. Okay.
Well, he's been in a ton of stuff. I mean, Casino, he's Any Given Sunday. He's been acting for a long time.
Okay.
But he said that he was on a, this was before 9/11. This was pre-9/11. And he said he's on a flight, and there was two Middle Eastern gentlemen on that flight in first class that just had this scary demeanor of they were just looking like they had hate in their eyes. They were looking, they were studying, they were just scouring everything. They was real nervous. And he even said that he just felt uncomfortable that whole flight. And once 9/11 happened, so when they started gathering images of some of the would-be pilots that were up there, they were putting them up, and he said he knew he recognized some of them guys from being on there. So there's no doubt that they done test runs on certain flights to see how things
work. They've been flying American for years. They watched us.
Yeah.
I remember seeing people standing. There was one guy standing in the back of the plane. They would stand back there and just watch everything we did. But you didn't really think twice about it.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, one of my friends, well, a flight attendant I know, she had Muhammad Atta on her flight a week before. She said he was sitting across from her jump seat. They knew exactly where to sit to position themselves across from the flight attendant's jump seats, because when the plane got up, they slit the flight attendant's throat.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they planned it. And they watched us. They were our best passengers. They were our premium customers. They flew us for years and watched everything that we did. A week before 9/11 happened also, I was doing a flight from Fort Lauderdale, which is where they all studied how to fly.
Yep.
Okay.
They all went to flight school in Florida.
And there were two Middle Eastern men sitting across from my jump seat. And I'll never forget, because they were staring at me, you know, like you said, like nasty. And I just looked up at them, and what I do is I just stare back at them, and they usually look away. These guys didn't look away. Then we got up to serve, and I leaned in and I said to them, "Can I get you something to drink?" And he said, he wouldn't answer me. I said, bebidos because I thought they were Spanish. So I was trying to speak Spanish to ask what he wanted to drink, because that's drink in Spanish. Mm-hmm. He looks at me and in a Middle Eastern accent and says to me, "I'm not Spanish." So me being me said, "Well, do you want a drink then?" I was just like, you know, he's annoying me, you know, because he didn't think anything about it, you know.
Right.
So it's just being annoying. So, but yeah, they had to position themselves right across, didn't take anything, which is the custom. They don't. They won't eat or drink. They smell like roses. They read the Quran. These are all telltale signs that we studied because, believe it or not, a lot of people don't know, flight attendants go to school for like 8 weeks intensely. You don't go home. I am put up in a hotel or at the flight academy. And, you know, and we study, you know, CPR. We study, you know, how to tell whether somebody's going into a diabetic, you know, with all different medical things where we studied terrorism. I mean, you know, I studied how to evacuate 7 different airplanes in case, you know, I need to, you know, we learn all emergency equipment. There's a lot that goes into being a flight attendant. You very rarely, you don't do much, you didn't do very much studying about how to serve somebody a drink.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of people don't realize how intense our program is. You have to get 90 or better on every test or they kick you out.
Wow.
It's very intense. So, yeah. So that's it. We used to call it Barbie boot camp because it's like being in the military and they're very strict. You know, it's not easy.
I believe it 100%. And you were spot on too about, you know, all of those went to flight school, Muhammad Atta, Hani Hanjour. I forget some of the other names right off the top of my head, but they would, the flight instructor, I've watched interviews and I've tried to track him down to get him on the show. You know, he said he never, I guess, you know, like you said at the time, you didn't find it odd that they flew a lot. They could have just been businessmen. That now looking back, you can tell they were watching and scouting. He said he never really found it odd that they never wanted to practice landing. It was, they always wanted to practice flying.
That should have been a clue, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Like you've got no interest in landing. You just want to
fly it.
Yeah. And one of the things that's really always gotten me about this whole thing is Hani Hanjour was supposedly the pilot on the one that hit the Pentagon. Now, I don't really, I'm in no way, shape or form a pilot, but I think if you have at least somewhat of a knowledge and you're flying an aircraft, the World Trade Center towers were big enough to where you could probably manage to hit that.
Yeah.
The Pentagon is not a very tall building in the grand scheme of things. And the way that that guy had to maneuver that plane to damn near hover over the lawn and drive it like a car right into the specific side of that building, who coincidentally supposedly housed a lot of information where Donald Rumsfeld the day before had said they were missing a couple $1 trillion, happened to hit right where that area was. It was really crazy. And the fact that still all these years later, the Pentagon, we're not talking about some secluded place that no one knows about. This is one of the most secure buildings on the damn planet. And you can't give me but a 2 second grainy bit of footage where a fireball explodes that you can't even really legit tell if it's a plane. All you see is something and a fireball. And I cannot buy for one damn second that the Pentagon or nowhere else can give me a better video version of what happened that day. There's no way.
That's bad.
Yeah. I mean, and you have plenty of video footage that surfaced over the years of them hitting the towers and whatnot. I mean,
that's all they play.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wound up getting PTSD from my experiences. I got very angry for a long time. And then I did, believe it or not, because I'm always where the action is. I went to London on a flight because I decided to go international. So I went to London. I was 2 blocks away from when they blew up the buses and the tubes in London, like 4 years later or whatever it was.
Wow.
And I, that morning, had to get on a bus, which wasn't allowed to park next to the hotel because it might blow up, but I had to get on it. and drive to the airport and fly back. And I did very well. I had a difficult passenger who was, I don't know if you're familiar, you're young, Tina Louise. You know who that is?
All right.
Gilligan's Island, the movie
star. Oh, yeah. Ginger, yeah.
She's horrible. She was, she's dead now, but anyway, but she was on my flight and she was just so annoying. So one of the girls that I was working with, the other flight attendant, was Irish and she had family in London and she didn't know if they were dead or alive. She was a little upset. So I told her, push the cart, I'll handle Miss Louise. So I was handling her. We landed. It's bizarre. It was 4 years later. A stress management team of flight attendants met the plane because after 9/11, they put together these teams in case of emergencies. Mm-hmm. So they call in the back of the plane where I was working and they said, oh, they want to know if everybody's okay. And I said, I'm not okay. And everybody looked at me, all the flight attendants went, what do you mean you're not okay? I'm like, I cried for the first time in 4 years. I couldn't stop crying for 4 days. That's when I went to somebody and I got help.
Wow. Well, I mean,
because
you think you just kept it in for all that time?
Yeah, for 4 years. No, well, actually, I was pretty angry. You know, I'm a very jovial, really nice kind of person. And my friends would say to my husband for 4 years, who is that? Because that's not my friend. Because I was very angry for 4 years. Because that's what you do, you know, when you have that. But, you know, I went and got help and, you know, so I took a month off and, you know, anyway, but yeah, it takes its toll on you. And I had run into Jesse, who's my publicist. I actually went to high school with Jesse.
Okay.
And I had run into him at an event that he was throwing and I started talking about my experiences and he said to me, oh my God, you need to write a book. And I said, you know how many people have told me I need to write a book? And he said, no, you need to write a book. I want to help you, you know, whatever. But I came home and I started thinking about it. And a lot of the PTSD started to come back up. And I said to my husband, I don't think I want to do this, you know. And believe it or not, maybe a few weeks after I saw Jesse, the TMZ special came out with the Fifth Airplane. I had already talked to him before that came out. He called me up. He's like, you have to do this now. You know, there were more than, you know, and now they came out with this. So I didn't know, still didn't know if I wanted to do it because, you know, it brings up a lot of stuff. And, you know, and my husband and Jesse both said to me, this could be very cathartic to keep telling your story so that you get it all out and, you know, that way. So yeah, that's why I'm doing it.
I believe that. Do you feel that that's helping you?
I don't know. You know, I don't know. I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. I had something not in your case. I don't want to say something similar, but something similar in the context that it was a tragic event. And then I started going on shows and talking about it. And I do find that I think being able to talk through it and explain it point by point, because that's what is key, I think, because when people research stuff, they don't necessarily have all the context that you would. Like if I research things about, you know, other planes, I'm not going to have all the context that you just gave me. But when I'm explaining it, I can give those contexts in detail. I can make sure that the listener, you know, understands exactly what was going on. Like you said, you described, you know, the crowds and everybody around and the temperament of some of the passengers. You know, you get a little bit more of that from there. And I feel as though it has helped me a little bit personally anyway.
Right.
Well, I mean, the story is really, really compelling because I 100% believe that, you know, those targets that were hit that day were not the only targets. I mean, why would you just say, okay, we're going to pick these three places and then, well, four, I guess, technically, but, and then not do anything else. So why they would just stop at that, you know, it doesn't make any sense other than the fact that they just didn't count on how quickly we would start to ground airplanes after the first attack.
Well, and think about it. If they thought those were the only four airplanes, then why did they do a sting operation? Why did they close down New York City? Why did they close down the tunnels, the bridges? Nobody was allowed out. I mean, think about that. Mm-hmm. If they didn't suspect that there were other terrorists in the area, yeah. Why would they do that?
100%.
It doesn't make any sense. Yeah. So.
What was the, I guess, the feeling of New York? Because I had a few 9/11 episodes on this show. I had an interviewed a firefighter that was there that day. I interviewed a guy that was in one of the towers, Eric Ronigan. And I like to get the vibe of the city, because I always tell people, in my opinion, the day after 9/11 is the last day that I can say that we were truly one nation under God. It didn't matter what race you were. It didn't matter what religion you were. It didn't matter what sexual preference you were, what political party you were. Everybody was a united nation for a period of time. It took obviously a really traumatic event, definitely the most traumatic in my lifetime, to get that. And we've obviously strayed away from it, you know, over the years.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure.
But what was the landscape like in New York, you know, 6 months after, a year after? What was the tone of the city? Because that's a tough city. I love visiting there. I love the people.
I think people got really angry.
Yeah.
I think there was a lot of anger going on, like me. Okay. I think people just... like a lot more road rage. You notice people, very short tempers. I mean, we were traumatized in New York. I mean, you know, but I do have to say it was very, very, it was lovely to see people that day. Like flight attendants told me that there were like passengers, like an 18-year-old girl who was going to London, home to her parents. And she couldn't get out, and the flight attendant drove her back to Connecticut and took care of the girl and called her parents. People were taking care of each other.
Yeah.
I mean, if anybody was in trouble, it brought out the best in human nature that particular day. Okay. On the plane, it probably lasted about, people were nice to us for about 2 weeks. That was about it. And then people got worse.
Yeah.
It was all about me after that. It's bizarre how, you know, everything was me after that. You know, people they weren't the same passengers I started out with. Let's put it that way.
You had no reservations at all going back flying after, you know, 9/11 had kind of settled down. That didn't even enter your mind then. Cause I guess you can look at it the way, like, nobody was really expecting them, I don't think, at the time, to use planes basically as weapons the way they did. So the security after that was ramped up through the wazoo. So the likelihood of them doing it again is very, very slim. And I mean, it's still anybody's going flying these days, all the checkpoints and TSA you have to go through, it would be hard to pull off anything like that again.
Well, see, now I'm trained in that type of terrorist. I was trained in terrorism, but not that type, because nobody had ever heard of it.
Right.
So now, one of the reasons I like to be the director at the front door is because I like that position even more after 9/11, because I would look at every single person who came on that plane. Mm-hmm. We're watching. I had a pilot who flew for us. He was Israeli. And he said to me, Carol, he said, don't ever forget. He said, because I'm going to tell you something. They're stupid, but they're smart. He said, and the way they're smart, he said, is they will wait you out till you forget, and then they'll try and do it all over again. Mm-hmm. And that's what he told me.
Yeah.
And I always remembered that, you know. My thing is, once we all retire, the people who went through this, because there's a lot of us who are older. America didn't hire young people like for years. You know, they after 9/11, they had a hiring freeze. I'd say probably 13 years I went, you know, without hiring anybody because of 9/11. Mm-hmm. And all these young kids now, you know, I just hope that they all remember, because, you know, you have to watch people.
Yeah. And it has to stay in the back of your mind, like you said, because I think sometimes it's overlooked, because obviously 9/11, you know, was so traumatic for so many people. It was played out on television in real time, but they tried to bomb that back in 93. Ramzi Youssef put a bomb in the basement, and, you know, luckily it didn't do the damage that I think they were hoping. But like you said, they waited it out. They planned it better, and they come back with another attempt later on. Like you said, around, what was it? You know, 8-9 years-ish, I guess that would be around the time. I mean, they, like you said, they waited it out and they come back and they struck again. And there was a guy that was over security in the World Towers. His name was Rick Rescorla. And he had a feeling that all this was going to happen. He sadly did pass away in the collapse of one of the towers, but he had a feeling that all this was going to happen. Yeah. And, you know, I think as long as New York and USA continue to strive, we're always going to be a target. We just, like you said, have to keep our eyes open. And it's funny you mentioned that, because I just took a flight last week. I've had to go to Fort Lauderdale, and I flew Spirit. The first time I've ever flown Spirit Airlines. And
I'm not saying anything.
Everybody on there, like, I don't know if I caught a glimpse of the pilot, but like all the stewardesses, everybody that you would meet coming in, everybody was really young, like looked like damn near teenagers. And I was just like, wow, this is the young crew. I mean, they were, don't get me wrong, they were nice. They were funny. I didn't have any personal issues with the flight. Chair wasn't the most comfortable in the world, but it was only an hour flight, so I didn't really mind. Yeah. And I think I paid $49 to fly from Charleston to Fort Lauderdale round trip. So I couldn't really beat that.
Yeah.
When you're flying today as a passenger, do you find yourself checking things out like you did when you were a flight attendant? Do you find yourself still kind of reverting back, looking around, seeing what's what?
I have passes for life. Okay. Now that I'm retired, I've gone to London twice last year. Well, the pandemic hit. That's one of the reasons I retired, but, you know, I went to Rome. I know the people. I know the flight attendants. A lot of times I'm like, you know, not in my seat. I'm like in the back talking to my coworkers who know, you know, even though I'm retired, I know a lot of people in New York. So, you know, they're, you know, I don't think that, I think the flight attendants basically are looking at them. I never really saw anybody suspicious. Mm-hmm. Although I did have another encounter probably 5 or 6 years after 9/11. I was on a flight that the flight attendants walked off the plane. They refused to take the plane because they said that there was terrorist activity between 3 or 4 Middle Eastern men on the flight. They actually told American Airlines, we're not taking it. And they all walked off, and they were scrambling to get more flight attendants. I was on standby, which is part of your job. Like 3 months out of the year, I sit reserve, which means they tell me what to do and where to go. So I was at the airport already sitting standby, and it was a very odd thing. I'm sitting standby, and all of a sudden, the manager says to me, flight attendant Hellerman, you have to go down to gate, blah, blah, blah. You have to hurry up now. And I said, okay, let me call my husband and tell him what flight I'm on. He goes, no, go now. I'm like, okay. So I thought maybe they were all waiting for me to take off or something. So I go down there, and there's nobody at that gate. So I pull it up on the computer, and I said, oh, that flight's going out of this gate. So I walk over there, and the gate agent goes to me, are you the standby? And I go, yeah. She goes, get on the plane. I'm like, okay. And nobody's in the waiting area. I figured, oh God, they're all on the plane. They're waiting for me. I get on the plane, and there's cleaners on the plane. They're like putting blankets out and stuff, you know, because it was a transcon again to San Francisco or something. So I'm like, I come off the plane, and I go to the gate agent. There's nobody on there. She goes, yes, there is. A flight attendant's in the back. Get on the plane. I'm like, okay. So I get on the plane. I walk to the back. And they said, oh, hi. How did they get you? I said, what are you talking about? They said, oh, she didn't hear. I said, what do you mean? They said, well, the flight attendants walked off this plane because there was suspicious behavior by the passengers. There were four Middle Eastern guys, and they were doing like all the suspicious things that we're taught. So they walked off and refused to take it. So they took everybody off the plane. They scanned everything again. Okay. But in America, it's discrimination. So you can't not, you know, if you don't find anything, you still have to board the people. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the flight attendants were refusing to take the flight. And I hadn't heard about it. That's why they yelled at me to get on the plane. That's why everybody was so nervous. They thought I was going to run away. Okay. So, and believe it or not, I worked business class on that flight. I worked it to San Francisco. Believe it or not, I had Pat Benatar in my business class.
Oh, wow.
Her and her husband are lovely. Anyway, so I had this one Middle Eastern man in my business class, and I walk up, and sure enough, you know, I said, can I get you something to drink? Because it's all about terrorism, so I smile in their face because they're not going to terrify me.
Right.
And let me just preface it by saying the only reason I took the flight is because we had air marshals on the plane. They put air marshals on the plane. So at least I knew I had, you know, some kind of help. The man refused to take anything from me. He was reading the Quran. During the flight, every time he went in the bathroom and came out, I went in after him and trashed the whole bathroom, looking to see if he left anything in there. After the service, I saw a couple of the air marshals go up front. So I went up to first, and I was talking to them, and I said, okay, what's going on? And they said, those guys are part of a terrorist cell that we're watching. Wow. So this is what people, 6 years later, okay, they're still watching it, and they're still, you know, so.
Do you guys as flight attendants have a heads up when there's going to be marshals on the plane?
Yeah, okay. We know.
But the general public usually has no idea.
No, they have no idea. And we are not supposed to, for something stupid, you don't approach them. You don't, you know, they're only there to protect the cockpit. They're only there for the flight deck so that nothing happens, you know, to the people on the plane. That's why they're there. So, well, anyway.
Carol, this is a very interesting story. I'm glad you were able to come on here and share it. Do you think you will ever get back into possibly putting pen to paper and putting this in a book? Are you happy with just doing it on podcast?
I'm trying, you know, I just need somebody to help me out. You know, yeah. I need a publisher, or I need somebody,
right.
You know?
Yeah. It's a long process, but I do think that, you know, being able to put, like I said, pen to paper on some of this stuff, it might be, you know, another way of, to kind of get past all this and move through it and bring awareness. Like you said, I think that's the biggest thing is there's now probably, I'm sure, going to be a changing of the guard of people that were in that industry now. Now you're getting an influx of newer people that either weren't alive or barely alive and don't, unless they've done research, don't really understand how 9/11 affected not only the world, but definitely air travel. At that point.
Yeah.
So you need to have something for people can read and study and be aware. And I think it would be great if you did. And we wish you the best of luck doing that going forward.
Thank you very much. And thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad you could make it. And if you get that book going, let me know. We'll bring you back on here and we will plug it away. And like I said, can't thank you enough for coming on the show.
Okay, thank you.
All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Hollywood Wade. That was Carol Heldman, and unfortunately, we are out of time. Tune in next week for an all-new episode of Crime and Entertainment. Carol, we thank you very much.
Bye.
Oh, boy, what an interview that was. As I said, folks, we had some bang-up interviews last year for 9/11. Go back and check those out in the archives. I really hope you enjoyed this interview. I was really stoked to have Carol on. I'd never heard that kind of thing before. I'd never heard those scenarios, and that's just wild to me. And I mean, there was so much more that went on that I think we know in 9/11, and I believe that, you know, someday it will all start to come to light. Hopefully, you know, we can get somebody in the White House that'll shed some light on all this. I thought Trump was going to do it. He did not. So hopefully we'll get somebody in there that can start, you know, peeling back the layers of everything that happened that day on 9/11. But what you can do to help us out is start peeling back the layers on your cell phones, folks, finding us on all your social medias, Crime and Entertainment on Instagram, Crime the letter N and Entertainment, over on Facebook, Crime the and symbol and Entertainment. We're available anywhere you get your audio podcast. That's Spotify, Apple, Google, Stitcher, anywhere you get it, CastBox, the whole nine yards. And if you could like and review, rate, comment, all that good stuff really helps drive us up the charts. And obviously we're on YouTube videos for all of our podcasts that we have here on Crime and Entertainment. Like, subscribe, hit that notification bell so you get notified every time we drop a video. That will do it for today's interview with Carol Hellerman, New York City flight attendant on 9/11. Tune in next week for an all-new episode of Crime and Entertainment.